So with that, I am going to mute myself, and I will turn this over to Sarah and Jeff to do a couple of resolutions. Then I think we'll play another Hall of Fame deal and the final resolution. Am I correct on that, guys?
That is what the plan is. Jeff,
Okay,
are you
well,
here with me?
holler at me, winner, if you need anything, but otherwise I
Morning,
will shut up and let you guys take this show until we are done with resolutions.
everyone. Thank you, Gabe. Thank you so much. Jeff, I was wondering if you wanted to lead the discussion since I sound like this.
Sure. I'm happy to do that. I suspect this might be Sarah's last hurrah as co-chair of resolutions. I don't
According to
know if
our
President
bylaws,
wants
right?
to take that on as well. So let's hear it for Sarah. Sarah, do you happen to have the full roster of our committee? Because I don't have it at my beck and call. I want to thank our committee before we figure out.
All right, let's see if we can do this. All right, so our committee
okay.
is
I found this on the web. Do you happen to have the full roster of our committee? Because I don't have it at my beck. I probably want to thank our committee before. Check it out.
Sarah sounds so much like Siri.
That's what I was going to say. Sarah, I didn't realize you changed your name.
Yeah, all the time. People at work, they'll call my name out and phones start going off all over the place. Oh, that was fantastic. I'm so
That's
glad
awesome.
That your phone listens to you so well. All right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because mine doesn't.
That's a first, I think.
Jeff, I keep saying that hey, S-I-R-I. Does not work until I ask somebody, like, are you serious? And then all of a sudden she'll pop off, what did you want?
Always so funny. All right, enough of that silliness. All right, so our committee is as follows. We have Keith Bauer, who is wonderful at being our reader at all of our committee meetings, because that is not an easy thing to do, for sure. And so I want to acknowledge how he helps us with that. We have Regina, who came on as my fellow girl. So I think we're going to have to find a girl to be on, a woman, girl, I whatever people like to go by, because we need a little bit of female representation.
Absolutely.
There. Yes, it's very important. And Regina has just done such a great job over the past couple of years here on resolutions, and I really appreciate what she can bring to the table. We have David Mandel, again, a newer member, and he brings a lot of spice to the mix and a lot of passion. And I think that that's what's so important these days is passion, because we lose sight of what we were looking for and what we're striving to get to if we don't have that. I can never forget Jean Lozano. Jean, you are amazing. You're meticulous. And Jeff and I think both drive you crazy because I'm somehow a mixture of two of you. I like detail, but I like the broad spectrum as well. So that's a very interesting place to be. But Jean, thank you for bringing your expertise. That's so valuable to our committee. We also have Steve Mendelson, who wasn't able to join us here during our resolutions committee because he was off doing some other things, but he has also always been super, super great in making sure that we are able to know what we're talking about is when it comes down to the laws. So that's great. And I think that's all of us. Is that all?
I think that's it. Yeah.
That is. All right. I did it. All right. Hey, I did it with the convention committee last night too. My mind's getting sharp. What the heck? I feel like crap, but my mind works. Hey.
All right. Steve, you want to read resolution or have, I assume you have it recorded, right? Is that what we're doing?
We're
going to
play it. Yes, we're going to play it.
Okay. So this is resolution number one. And is this the one on paratransit, correct?
I think we did Margie's.
Is the one on grocery. What's the C?
GCRA, grocery cart return. The
grocery cart return. Yes. Okay. Anyway, you'll all get it. It's not a pleasant subject.
Resolution 2024-01, safety at openings into interior grocery cart return areas. Whereas many big box slash superstores, for example, Walmart, Target, Costco, Sam's Club, are designed to have a grocery shopping cart return area, GCRA, within the building or adjacent to the store entrance. And whereas a GCRA is a designated location where employees return grocery carts when they are not in use. And whereas when an employee returns carts through the GCRA, they roll the carts through an opening in the store's exterior wall. And whereas a GCRA opening can either be at the front or side of a store. And whereas these GCRA openings can vary in dimension. And whereas the opening of a GCRA is closed off most often through the use of vertical or horizontal closing doors. And whereas store employees are responsible for returning the grocery carts into these GCRAs, as well as keeping the GCRA door closed when carts are not being returned or not in use. And whereas these GCRA doors are not reliably kept closed by the employees, which can expose customers with vision disabilities to a safety hazard if they should enter those GCRA openings that frequently have a clearance of less than 80 inches in height. And whereas there have been reports of Californians who are blind or have low vision with white canes and service animals running into the overhead walls above these GCRA openings. And whereas at least one of these reported incidents resulted in serious injury. And whereas there are no standards in the California Code of Regulations, Title 24, Part 2, Chapter 11B, which specifically address the location, dimensions, and method of closure of the openings of GCRAs. And whereas, however, protruding object requirements can be found in Title 24, Section 11B, 307.4 Vertical Clearance, contains a clearance height requirement of 80 inches, and whereas although it is eminently reasonable to interpret this requirement as applying to the vertical clearance for a GCRA, that requirement is not being enforced by local building officials because neither those officials nor the Division of the State Architect, DSA, has made such an interpretation that the vertical clearance standard is applicable to a non-pedestrian entryway. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the California Council of the Blind, CCB, assembled in virtual conference and convention this 7th day of April 2024, that this organization strongly urge either that, the DSA either one. Clarify in writing that the 80-inch vertical clearance requirement contained in Title 24, Section 11B, 307.4 applies to GCRAs or two. Research and develop standards for emergency adoption by the California Building Standards Commission, CBSC, which specifically address the location, dimensions, and method of closure of GCRA's openings. And be it further resolved that CCB work with the Division of the State Architect and California Building Officials, Inc., to develop training and education opportunities for building officials in their understanding of the need to enforce these GCRA requirements, and be it further resolved that if such a clarifying interpretation or emergency regulations are not promptly adopted, this organization seek legislative or legal remedies. End of resolution.
Okay, this resolution was submitted by Margie Donovan, with assistance from Gene Lozano, and I'm going to assume that this is very personal to Margie, and I'm going to assume that she would like to speak. So can we see if her hand is raised?
Margie, you should be unmuted.
Before you speak, I forgot to say, and I should have done this because I've only said it 100 times over the years, the committee recommends a do pass.
Yes.
Okay.
There you are.
I am here. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Jean. And thank you, committee, for diligently working on this. It was not easy. I am the one subject mentioned in there that got severely injured. I'm still dealing with a traumatic brain injury in 10 months post injury. Pretty severe symptoms that altered my life drastically. The beauty in this happening to me is CCV members know that I have a big mouth. And I do believe I've prevented others from this happening too. I've posted this on list. People have gone and checked them out. I suggest if you have a Walmart by you in particular, they are the most guilty. I'm not saying they are the only one, but just last night at Richard's 50th birthday party, I was speaking to a friend and they had no idea these existed, what they look like. And for all intents and purposes, your cane will go into them or your guide dog because they are not an overhead. Guide dogs are trained in overheads, not a 3 foot off the ground situation. And just as a latest situation to support this resolution, I was asked by my attorney to send an email to corporate and to my local manager, Walmart, asking them to keep that door closed at all times. That's their policy, the corporate policy, or to put a person there to prevent blind people. They received it. We had pictures yesterday. It's still open. And we can't do anything. My own legal actions will be my own legal actions based on my own injury, and we can impact my Walmart. My attorney says because there's no law that requires it, that we cannot make a systemic change in Walmart. I want to address the one thing that I think is so important here. I think the word to take legal action scares all of us, and it should scare us. We don't have the money. My intent in putting that in is to work with DRC, DRA, some other disability organization should we need to. I'm not suggesting CCB dumps its pocket of money and sue, but this is a very serious hazard, just as bad, if not worse, than when we went after edge detection on BART platforms. This is a very serious situation. It's altered my life drastically. As of 2 weeks ago, I resigned from all of my CCB, ACB, and extracurricular activities to support my healing process. I will be quiet now, see if there's any questions.
This is Gabe, and I actually have a question, if I may.
Oh.
Well, not necessarily for you, Margie.
Moderating.
Yeah, go for it, Gabe.
It's more for the committee here. I can't remember the first resolve clause, if Steve or somebody has that there. Because I had a question about how it was implemented. I think it said advocate for, you know, that seems to be advocate with the State Department of Architect or whatever it was. I'm just kind of curious what the intent of how we advocate. Is it... is the intent to send letters or, you know, try to open dialogue with them? What's the intent there?
Can I answer that?
It would be good for Margie to answer.
If Steve had that resolve clause, I kind of want to hear.
You talk about the first one?
The first resolve clause, I think it was.
The American Council of Blind, assembled in California virtual Council. Convention, blah, 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 that this organization strongly urge either, is this what you're looking for, the DSA, to either clarify in writing, is this the clause you're looking for, the next one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Either clarify in writing that the 80-inch vertical clearance requirement contained in Title 24, Section 11B, 307D, applies to GCRAs, or research and develop standards for emergency adoption by the California Building Standards Commission, CBSC, which specifically address the location, dimensions, and method of closure of GCRA openings.
Well, could you repeat your question, Gabe, please?
Yeah, I was just going to. So, yeah, so my question is basically, you know, if we're going to advocate, is that just a sent? You know, is the intent that we send them a letter and open a dialogue, or what's the intent of how we?
Well, I think we will begin with a letter, and then I am sure that Gene and others, and we may try to get, you know, someone like DRC involved in it as well, but I think Gene and others will press the point through their internal, networks. Gene, for example, has the ability to talk directly with the state architect's office, and so we won't just let it go with a letter. I think Margie would shoot us if we did.
No, that's what I said. Is it to start off with sending him a letter and then try to open dialogues? Okay.
Yes.
That's kind of what I was assuming. I just wanted to make sure that was clarified. And Margie, you were going to say something.
I'm sorry, we also have a question.
To further clarify, Gina's already had a personal conversation with the state architect, and this has been brought to the attention. He was not aware of it. He sees the problem. And I think it starts by sending the resolution with a cover letter. And mm-hmm. I would hope that Gene would be involved. I mean, this is his area of expertise. I'm just the victim, so to speak. But I think Gene and I would carry on. And if we needed to get DRC or DRA or whoever involved, that we would go back to the board and ask them. I hope that explains it.
No, it does, because this is something that I think we're definitely going to be getting started on in the next couple of months, but I can see it also continuing on into the next administration after SAR takes over. So I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page with that.
May even go beyond that.
Okay, thank you. We have another question.
Hold on. David Jackson, you are unmuted. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah. Mr. President, since I'm on the other side, am I allowed to ask my question or should I wait?
No, ask your question right now.
Okay. So in this resolution, which I think is a great one, were independents ever considered for this? I've noticed I shop at an independent and they do have a storage area, but while the store is open, they have a corral where you bring the cart and it slides down. When I enter the store, I have to negotiate this area, and the sidewalk is extremely narrow. I also have to deal with parking meters, and there have been a number of times where I have where my guide has banged up against this area, and I've whacked my hand where I control the dog up against this. So I'm curious as to whether there is some recourse for independent.
So let me respond in this way. It very probably is the case that independent stores have this same problem. But if anything is done in terms of, solving this loophole that currently exists, it will apply equally to independents as well as bigger stores. So even though we haven't mentioned independents in the resolution, David, and your point is well taken, I don't think that's going to be crucial in terms of the ultimate solution, because it will apply across the board.
And just to, if I could add, it sounds like, David, what you're talking about is a little bit different. You're talking about the corral outside of the store, and I would love to talk to you offline about how to advocate for that, because it sounds like a path of travel issue. Just FYI. But yeah, when we listed stores at the beginning, it was really just to give people more of an idea of what we're talking about as examples.
So I guess the last part is, even though this is not something that may or may not be a solution, is this more of an issue where I'd have to go to the corporation that owns the facility to talk to them?
There's actually some other ways that you could do it, and I don't know that you know that I'm a certified ADA coordinator, so I could talk to you offline and give you some advice and help you with some solutions, because, yeah, that definitely sounds like a path of travel issue that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, and there are protruding object requirements, which we actually referred to in this resolution, mm-hmm. and they may or may not help you.
And it's just not to this particular entity that I'm talking about, but there are others that have this, who are independents as well. So,
David, I think you have laws to cover you right now, and I would follow up with Sarah.
Yeah, sure. Or Gene, either one.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Do we have any other people who would like to speak? Okay. So, Gabe, do we use the same?
Actually, I think Gene's hand is raised.
I just want to go back on the question Gabe started. Yes, Gabe, as it was stated, I had a meeting last fall with the state architect, Ida Claire, and her staff, including Eric Draper. And we talked about this issue. They actually had said that they had observed the problem at the, particularly at the Folsom Walmart, but it had never occurred to them of the danger. And after my mentioning what had happened, it hit home. And they promised to get back to me, and I was talking about seeing about through this next code cycle that has started, that they introduced some regulations. I have not been privy to the regulations yet or anyone, and I don't think there's anything in this code cycle. I did send a follow-up letter about 2 weeks ago, have not gotten a response, but I did tell them that we were going to be introducing a resolution on this matter at the convention, that it was my hope that the resolution were to pass and that they could expect, whether the resolution did or did not pass, that there would be at least some follow-up on this. The other thing is, the path of travel is a factor. That's something that your local department that deals with the private right-of-way, not the public, but the private right-of-way, would address. And also, that would be something I also, as Carol talked to you about, the store, the local store. These matters were specifically brought up in this resolution, David. Not that they're not important, but it was the immediacy was the danger of the openings for the interior entrance into these. That does not, whether this resolution does pass, does not preclude discussions on the whole general problem that we can pursue, and it might have to take the development further of future regulations on the enhancements to the existing path travel. So we've heard you, and those concerns are legit and will be looked at. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Okay, so...
And Jeff, may I respond to Gene?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Gene, thanks for that. I'm happy to hear that you've already started or tried to start on that dialogue, and that the things are already hopefully in progress. But as I think Jeff said, this is a very important resolution, and I also hope it passes. And that assuming it does, we will definitely be following up with a letter and copy of the resolution very soon on this one, and get involved. So thank you for all of your work that you already do, and for already getting this ball rolling.
All right. Okay. So
you're going to ask me a question before.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I'm assuming we use the same negative voting first on it to determine if there's reason for it. Yeah. Okay. So
that's what I recall. That's what I recall our standing rules saying.
Right. So, if you are opposed to this resolution, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to raise your hand. And if we get less than 10 people that raise their hands, we're going to declare this resolution passed without a formal vote. Okay, so we're going to give another 15 or 20 seconds here so that we catch anybody who has a contrary view. Andrea, do we have any hands raised?
We do not.
Okay. then I will declare the resolution adopted. Thank you very much.
Woo-hoo. Congratulations, Margie. And just as a reminder, just as a reminder to folks, Andrea will be lowering your hand after you speak. And so when you hit it again, it raises it back up. I think that may have been what happened. And it happens to me a lot on meetings, too. So awesome.
Okay. That's great. So now we are on our second. And this resolution was submitted by a whole team of individuals. I neglected, and I apologize, to write down all the names. It includes Christy Crespin, David Mandel, Jordan Rander, and hopefully one of them will give me the rest of the names, because I just can't bring them to mind. But it's an excellent resolution, and you will now hear it.
Resolution 2024-02, Equitable Paratransit Services. Whereas prior to passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, ADA, the availability and quality of paratransit service varied widely throughout California and the nation, and whereas the ADA requires jurisdictions with fixed route service to establish complementary paratransit service, and whereas at its core, the goal of ADA complementary paratransit service is to enable riders whose disabilities preclude them from using fixed route service to have a means of transport to and from places served by a jurisdiction's fixed route service. And whereas paratransit service is necessary for many people with disabilities, including those who are blind or have low vision, to maximize their independence by having the necessary transportation options to allow them to participate in all aspects of daily life, such as education, employment, leisure, and accessing medical and social services. And whereas, as a result of the federal ADA regulations adopted pursuant to the limited core goal of ADA complementary paratransit, these services are, more often than not, expensive, unreliable, and not intended to enable people with disabilities to get wherever they need to go when they need to get there. And whereas, because people with disabilities are both disproportionately low income and in disadvantaged and underserved groups, the failure of ADA complementary paratransit to meet their needs creates significant inequities, based on the adverse impact on their ability to live independently. And whereas, in the past, CCB and other disability organizations have neither adequately addressed nor acted upon the serious inequities of paratransit service. And whereas, freedom of movement is a fundamental human right. And whereas, paratransit riders often report feeling powerless and hopeless, because the minimum requirements governing paratransit service essentially deny them this fundamental right. And whereas the specific inequities in paratransit service include, but are not limited to, the high cost of fares, the inadequate ability to transfer between jurisdictions, 3/4 mile eligibility restriction, the lack of same day service and recertification of riders with permanent disabilities. And whereas the time required for reserving rides, the lack of same day scheduling, the often outrageous time that paratransit riders must spend on a vehicle, missed appointments, and other inequities would be considered unconscionable were these circumstances faced by the driving public. And whereas some paratransit providers have undertaken innovative initiatives that show promise for the future. And whereas nonetheless it is abundantly clear that people with disabilities must begin to advocate for a paradigm shift in the basic purpose behind the provision of paratransit service, through short-term and long-term change at the local, state, and ultimately the national level, now, therefore, be it resolved in virtual convention assembled this 7th day of April, 2024, that this organization commit to advocate for both the short-term and long-term changes in paratransit so that riders can get where they need to go when they need to get there, and be it further resolved that CCB assemble a task force of active and knowledgeable paratransit riders, which may include the authors of this resolution, to develop a paratransit Bill of Rights and white paper, recommending next steps that this organization should take to further the goals of this resolution, and be it further resolved that this organization endeavor to disseminate the Bill of Rights and white paper developed pursuant to this resolution to California transit agencies, public transit and disability rights advocates, the media and the public, and be it further resolved that the Publications Committee consider focusing an issue of the Blind Californian BC on paratransit, to increase awareness of its shortcomings and encourage advocacy. And be it further resolved that this organization encourage its members who have an appropriate understanding of paratransit requirements to join transit district or paratransit agency advisory boards, transit advocacy groups, and other appropriate entities to help bring about the changes sought by this resolution. And be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be forwarded to the American Council of the Blind for action at its 2024 National Convention. End of resolution.
So, let me just say a couple things before I recognize speakers. First, I want to commend both the drafters of this resolution and the committee on an extremely diligent and hardworking effort to craft a resolution that recognizes the problems that we face in the paratransit system and really the long-term advocacy needs that relate to those issues. I also want to say this. The committee is very keenly aware of limitations on staff and member, time and energy and ability. We have put in some proposed items to be worked on within CCB, but we understand and have inserted some wiggle room words, I guess you'd call them, because we know that we might not be able to accomplish as much as we would like to. So this has been drafted in a very carefully constructed manner, and I think and I'll say this to our president and chair of the ACB Resolutions Committee, this is a resolution that I, for one, will be proud to take back to ACB on this very important topic. So I've talked far too much. Do we have speakers that wish to speak? But I forgot to say it again. Boy, I'm really, I need to get off this committee. The committee recommends a do pass.
Okay. Christy is for now. I need to ask, I don't know if David, your hand is up again. I'm not sure if that's for this. If it is, maybe you could just leave it up. If not, could you lower it, please? Cause it's up again. I'm going to take Christy first. We have several hands. So Christy, go ahead.
Okay, so the people that got together from our chapter, Linda Samulski, Nellie Emerson, Jordan Marunder, and myself, David Mondell from San Francisco, Nikki from San Francisco, Nikki Nicolette Noyes, and I hope I'm not forgetting anybody. Oh, Ed Crespin, my husband. Oh, yes. So we had submitted 6 resolutions. Every year we thought about submitting a resolution, it always got deferred. Oh, we'll do it later. We'll do it. We'll talk about it later. We'll help you later. Well, we all got tired of that. And so I invited people who wanted to contribute to get on some Zoom calls. And we did a lot of hot and heavy working between now and then. And so this is a long resolution. And we are asking a lot. But we also understand how frustrating and humiliating it has been for many of us, if not most of us, to the point that we don't even use paratransit unless we have to. It's a last resort measure, but not everyone can do that. And we want to, as the title says, we want this paratransit service to be equitable. And there's so much that can be done. And we appreciate, you know, when people are working with paratransit and transit agencies that are becoming and doing more innovative kinds of things. But you know, most people, most agencies will work just to the letter of the law, and the letter of the law is not good enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Christy, for those remarks. And I want to applaud Christy and urge others not to say things that have already been said. Especially if those speaking for the resolution, I don't know if we have any against, but if you're speaking for the resolution, try not to duplicate.
Okay, Sheila.
I'm for the resolution, but my concern is, and I'm not, I don't have a problem with its length or anything in it. My concern is that at least in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm in Oakland, so it's East Bay Paratransit that we deal with, they are paid for by BART, and which is a train system, and by AC Transit, which is the Alameda Contra Costa County Transit System. And those are the people who really pull the strings. However, whenever there is a problem concerning paratransit, we are diverted to paratransit advisory committees that have no true power. And I don't have a recommendation at this moment, but I see a writing of a resolution in my future where, and I will definitely tap Christy on the shoulder and the committee can reconvene that put this one together too, because what I feel is that paratransit is ableist and it is medical model based, and these are problems, and I think that's at the root of a lot of it. But the ADA is 33 years old and things need to be updated, and I'm not really sure how, but we need the actual people who pay the bill for paratransit to exist to be the ones that have to make the decision, because otherwise the advisors can advise all day long, but that won't matter. So, yes.
Okay, thank you, Sheila, for that. Next hand.
Oh, well, I think our bylaws said that we have, or our Samuel said 20 minutes
okay.
for the first round
okay.
of debate.
But are there any? I know it's going to be hard to do this, but
it's always a struggle, isn't it? To find the people.
It would be
on
nice to know if anybody is actually opposed to this resolution. I'm not going to stop people from speaking who are in favor of it yet, but I would like to give it an opportunity for those who are opposed to speak, if there are anybody.
I can't imagine anybody, speaking as a fellow paratransit rider.
Well, I can't either, but that's not our...
No, I understand. And in our county, they've eliminated their no-strand policy, which is really awful for us because...
So, is there a way to write down the names? Maybe Lisa or someone could write down the names of the hands that are up and we could find out.
I have them all right here.
Okay. Could you put your hands down, and then if you're opposed,
okay,
put your hand back up again in a minute.
Okay, two hands have gone down. David and Dirk Gayhart have lowered their hands.
And I'm writing
a list. This is a little unorthodox, but so we have two more hands. I think we can take them. Please try to be brief. I know they are four, but I think we want to let them speak. And it's within the 20 minutes, so.
Okay, this is David. And I was one of the drafters of the resolution. First of all, I want to acknowledge the assistance and support of Ron Brooks. Many of you know him as one of the most renowned national accessibility consultants that I can think of. He was absolutely in support, and he just wanted me to let everyone know that he is very pleased with what we have been doing. I want to just quickly urge all of you, all of your chapters, people who are very concerned about paratransit. I've heard complaints about paratransit for years. I don't want to hear any more complaints. It's very important that we approach our transit agency boards of directors and other official accessibility managers and what have you. Forget the advisory committees. I'm sorry, I agree with Sheila. I'm on them. I'm on several. They don't do anything. They are paper. We need to reach the board of directors, and we need to explain to them why it is that we deserve the same equitable transportation that they have, because many of them, whether they admit it or not, drive. They don't always take the bus, and they certainly don't take ADA paratransit. So, and I would like to offer my services, and I'm sure there will be others in this organization who will help you and advise you. I would also like us to create, and I know that Jean has had the Committee on Access and Transportation, and it has served ably for many, many years, but it is no longer functioning. And I would like to urge our president-elect to please let us create a transportation committee and let us start working on paratransit and fixed route transit issues very earnestly. But because we have resource and staff limitations, I would like to urge those of you who are very concerned about paratransit in your local communities to reach out to your local agencies, attend meetings. If you get a lot of people to attend meetings, I can tell you, they'll look at you, at your bodies, they'll hear your voices, and they will listen. We should also reach out to the rest of the disability community and get them involved, because they also have concerns. And if we all work together, I think we will be able to get equitable paratransit sooner or later in this state. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have
okay,
our final
we have
speaker.
Artists who okay. doesn't live in California anymore, but that's okay.
that's why I wanted to speak.
We still love you, artist.
one of the best things about moving is the paratransit. in Colorado, one of the options for paratransit is choosing vouchers on Uber and Lyft. And so we get a limited amount of vouchers for those to use each month with up to a spending limit for each trip. And, of course, we have to pay the tip. But it's a great benefit, and they have found they've saved lots of money because they don't need as many regular paratransit vehicles. So, I mean, there are some downsides. We've been dropped at places that we didn't want to be dropped off and have to call back in. But, you know, every system has, you know, a few downsides. But it's excellent. And I'm willing to see if I can find out the specific regulations of what they do and share them with the people working on this to see if it's something that might urge some of the transit companies in California to look at.
Okay. Thank you, Artis. See, she moves away, and then she rubs salt in the wound by telling us how great it is where she is.
Sorry about that, Jeff.
Are you guys forming a CCB East or CCB Mountain?
Okay.
Okay. I'm
sorry. We have another hand?
We do. We have Dirk Nehart. Dirk,
okay,
go ahead.
Dirk.
To make the resolution better, I think it would be fruitful to identify two things in which a paratransit is failing and have two suggested solutions. We will have a white paper later, but before we distribute the resolution, we should identify problems.
Okay, yeah, we've identified a lot of the problems, and we actually have indicated that there have been innovations. We haven't gone into detail about that, but we have indicated.
But I haven't heard it in the resolution.
Yeah, it is in the resolution.
There is
a clause.
The resolution. I did not hear a single thing that had to be fixed, and I did not hear a single thing how to fix it.
Yeah, we have several whereases about the problems, and then we have sort of a generic sentence about how there are innovations that some entities have undertaken.
Well, I listened to the resolution, and I did not hear either the specific problem or the specific solution. Well, if you feel good that those two things are in there, that's great.
Would you like Steve to read a couple of those clauses, or will you take it on faith from what I said?
I believe in you. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Thank you, Dirk. I appreciate that.
Okay. Margie has her hand raised. She's the last person.
Well, I really appreciate what Artis just shared. We, as an organization, have never been, and I hope we will never be, in a position to tell our transit agencies or any other entities what type of vehicles, programs to contract with. Many of us know Lisa and Peter Pardini. They've been test piloting Uber or Lyft over in Marin County. She's had several horrific guide dog discriminations. Two drivers have been pulled and two are being prosecuted. I think it's great that that's an option, but it's a problem with guide dogs. We also know there's User, there's other companies. This resolution doesn't state how. And like all of our other resolutions we've ever passed, we don't tell them who to vendorize with. We just tell them to get the darn job done. So while it works there, neither of them are guide dog users, and I would encourage us to never, never specify who they should work with in particular. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Margie. Okay. We have no more hands.
Yes.
Yes.
I've had my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Regina. I apologize.
Regina,
you're on the panelist side.
Yeah, I'm not looking. I'm sorry.
As a reminder, anyone on the panelist side, you can
just talk.
Say your name to be recognized.
Go right ahead.
That's much easier.
I'm never going to stop my chapter president from talking.
Yeah, please do.
I did try saying my name, but no one heard me. So that's why I raised my hand. Okay. I just want to say that this is very county specific, and I wouldn't want to, as Margie alluded to, discourage people from joining the advisory commissions. There's a role for them, and although you think that they may not make a difference in our county, I believe they have, because we have done it in certain ways. And sometimes it's one piece of a puzzle. And I think we talked about this in the government affairs report. Advocacy is many pieces. It's not one thing and then you get what you want. And it's arduous, but it can move forward. And I think our Hall of Fame recordings show us that it's that diligence and it's that seeing of the whole picture that makes advocacy work. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Thank you, Regina.
And Regina, I just wanted to thank you for saying that, because I was going to say very similar things. I've seen a big difference here as well. It doesn't mean that things are perfect or better, but, you know, the thing is that there's been a lot of progress. And, you know, so I do encourage people get involved in advisory boards and build relationships, because that's where it starts.
And I'm only on the computer. And
okay, Jeff, David has his hand up again. I don't know if you want to take his hand at the moment.
I think the 20 minutes has expired.
Yeah, he's
actually
the only one that's left.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
I think
thank you.
I'm sorry, David,
right.
But it's a 20-minute period. So, all right. In that case, we will go to a vote. And so now, if you are opposed to this resolution.
Jeff, before we do that, Andrea, can you please. Is there a button to lower all hands so we can try that?
I will do that. Dave. Thank you. Yeah, I'll
try to make sure all hands are lowered before we.
Thank you.
Yeah, before we start the vote. Thank you. Hold on.
I don't think we've done a great job of doing that, but I think because we have some hands that keep popping up, let's just try to check, make sure all hands are down before we have Jeff call for the vote.
Hey, there are no hands.
Okay, if you are opposed to this resolution, please raise your hand, and we'll give you about 30 seconds to do that, and if there's 10 or so of you that are going in that direction, then we will take a formal vote.
Okay, we have no hands, Jeff.
All right, so I would declare this resolution adopted. Thank you to everyone who worked on it, and all of those who commented. So I'll turn it back over to Gabe for a moment.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break from resolutions for just a moment, and we're going to hear one more Hall of Fame recording. And sir, you've been calling them videos, I think, just before last week. I think I heard some about an image. So, you know, you're not that far off, really.
Welcome to the Hall of Fame History Project as we celebrate our 90th anniversary.
You were also voted into the Hall of Fame, and I understand that you worked for a CCB at one time.
That is correct. I did work for CCB for 2 years. In 2009, the long-standing Director of Governmental Affairs, Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, Dan Kaiser, moved on to other things, and so a position became open, so I applied and was accepted in the position of Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. So for 2 years, I did that work, working on legislation, giving a lot of reports to CCB in various formats about what we were doing, encouraging members to be stronger advocates. And that was a fascinating experience. And then I moved on to other things after 2 years. That was from 2009 to 2011 when I did that. And since that time, that position has been filled on a volunteer basis. Hopefully in the future, we'll be in a position where we can have more paid staff to do this and other roles. But for now, that's a volunteer position.
That is great. And do you have any thoughts about the future of CCB?
Yes, I believe that CCB definitely has a future. I think that the key to our future is to be forward-looking and not backward-looking, not just trying to continue doing exactly what we may have done in the past, because times do change, society changes, and so we have to be willing to change with society. In my opinion, what that means CCB needs to do is to professionalize its operations. That doesn't sit well with some folks. That doesn't mean that members give up control of the organization, but it means that in the administrative area, we need to tighten up our procedures and processes so that we can be in a position to qualify for philanthropic donations, grants, and the like. And those grantors and donors want certain assurances that their money will be spent well, and that means that we have to have procedures in place to give them the information they need in order to have confidence in our work. I also think that we need to work very hard on membership growth. A lot of the people that were in the organization when I joined are still here. Of course, a lot of them are gone now, and we haven't done a great job of replacing them. That's not anybody's fault. It just happened that way. But I think that a high priority in the short term, at least, and really ongoing for CCB, is for all of us to learn how to reach out into our communities and bring more people into our organization, because I believe that there are hundreds of thousands of people in California who are part of our community and don't know it. And if we can reach out to them, I believe that we can greatly expand. And as we have more people, there's more things we can do. I think that it's a conversation we need to have, but I am optimistic for the future. I think that there is opportunity there, and it's important for us to look forward and seize those opportunities.
Let me preface that specific question by saying that I think that the future of all membership organizations is very much up in the air. I read a book about 20 years ago called Bowling Alone, and it basically charted the decline in volunteerism from the 1950s on, and I think the book was written in 2000 or thereabouts. And it talked about how all organizations that rely on members, volunteers, have been in decline. You know, I'm active in our local Lions Club, and Lions here in the United States, even though Lions internationally is the largest service organization in the world,
Membership is declining in Lions. We know membership is declining in all organizations. And so I'll tell you a couple of things. One, because not-for-profit organizations, the fiscal requirements, the legal requirements are stricter than they have ever been in terms of how we fundraise, what percentage of our donations can go toward administrative expenses, so on and so forth. We need to not just be a membership organization, but we need folks who have some grasp of business. We need to have professionals, and whether they be paid professionals, which CCB is not in a position to do right now, but we need volunteers, we need members who have a grasp of what is needed to run a not-for-profit organization. California isn't the only affiliate that has had issues with its 501c3 status. There are several. And one of the things that we have to do is to really become more knowledgeable and be more aware of what is required of a not-for-profit organization. And not only do we need to do that, but we also need to have, we're always talking about recruiting members. In this day and age, folks want to know what's in it for them. We have to offer something in order for folks to join. And if we don't do that, then membership will not grow. And what you're seeing in other parts of the country as a number of ACB state affiliates shrink in their membership is you're seeing, for example, more joint conventions, more activities where two or three or four states combine their forces. And so, you know, what I said when I was still ACB president was, I foresee a time when we will have regional affiliates. And I'm not saying that that's where CCB is heading, but if we don't figure some things out, if we don't become or attract more persons who have professional backgrounds and are willing to lend their expertise to helping the organization survive and function, we may go that direction. I'd love to be optimistic as to our future, but I'm not especially optimistic about the future of most membership-driven organizations based on what I've observed over the last 20, 30, 40 years. If you want to learn about membership organizations and what's happening in this country vis-a-vis volunteerism, read the book. You'll learn a lot.
Finally, I want to take a shot at answering the question as to the future of the California Council of the Blind. I think we're at a crossroads. I don't claim to be the visionary that some in this organization are, especially folks like, you know, past ACB and CCB President Mitch Pomerantz, but who mentored me in many ways. However, I do think we have some things that are going for us and some things that are posing serious issues. We still remain the leader in legislative advocacy in this state. And we, you know, due to our willingness to work through succession, I think we're going to, you know, potentially continue to lead in legislative advocacy. And that's an area that I'm really proud of. We also have some younger leaders, you know, 30s, 40s, and that really is important because both in the state and nationally, we're a growing organization. So the fact that we have younger leaders is something that will help us move into the future. However, having said that, I am really concerned about our membership and really the membership of many state affiliates. Our membership has fallen perhaps by 40% over what it once was. And that is, in my view, a precipitous drop. We're starting to lose local chapter affiliates. Others have far fewer members than they once did. I don't think COVID is the only reason, although that certainly didn't help us any. I think we're going to need to somehow or other devote more resources, both financial and member time, to working on a membership plan. And that may need to be our biggest priority for a couple of years, to start to build back chapters. I don't expect we're going to have a dramatic rise in membership right away, but if we can turn the trend around so that we begin to, say, increase our membership by, you know, even 2 or 3% a year for the over the next several years, that will really begin to build us back better, so to speak. If we don't, we risk becoming a second-rate organization. The drop in membership already makes it more difficult for us to deal comprehensively with many of the issues that we have in front of us, both advocacy and financial problems, and really membership issues. So I hope that the next president will make membership perhaps the highest priority in the organization over the near term.
We'll be back later with another episode from our Hall of Fame History Project.
Thank you for those folks in that one. And with that, we'll go back to Jeff and Sarah for another resolution.
So we have a final volunteer resolution, which you are prohibited from voting against. So let's hear the resolution. Oh, and I want to thank, I believe it is Guillermo who engineered these. If I'm thanking the wrong person, so be it. And I want to thank him for doing that.
Resolution 2024-03, Resolution of Appreciation for Volunteers. Whereas the 2024 virtual CCB conference and convention would not have been a rousing success without the assistance of our outstanding volunteers, now, therefore, be it resolved by the California Council of the Blind in virtual convention assembled this 7th day of April, 2024, that this organization express its sincere appreciation to each and every volunteer who has helped with the 2024 virtual CCB conference and convention, and be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be sent to each volunteer. End of resolution.
All right, so we will go to our formal procedure. Do we have any hands that care to vote against this resolution? And we're taking down names if you do, so.
Right,
we're not gonna, right. We're not gonna allow for any discussion on this one.
Well, in the past, we have habitually frequently not, but if there's somebody that really wants to discuss, I guess we... Well, no, we're already starting to take the vote. I think we better not.
Okay.
Did anyone raise their hand, Andrea?
And if so, Jeff wants their name.
Yeah.
And Andrea, you're muted if you don't know. The Zoom gremlins are here.
All right. I think we can, if Andrea
there's,
can get
there's
unmuted,
no raised hands.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
So since Gabe did chastise me correctly, if there's anybody that wants to discuss this resolution, we will now allow for any really important words that you might have.
I was just going to say there that, Andrea, your voice got a lot lower.
And that overpowers the mute button on Zoom. If your mute button on your headset is engaged.
Interesting.
I will blame it on the cat. I think he's the one who engaged it.
That's what I was doing this household.
Okay, we do
cat.
Have... One hand, okay. Yeah, everything gets blamed on him. Dirk.
Thanks. Gratitude is especially due to our Zoom master. Who is that air volunteer?
Mm-hmm. Who is
I'm
what?
Sorry, what was your question? Zoom master.
We've had a bunch of people handling Zoom. We've had Andrea, Steve. We've had Desi from, oh my gosh,
Desi from Tennessee.
Yeah, and we've also had a bunch of streamers. Yeah, we've had a ton of people that have been manning our Zoom that's being haunted by our CCB Hall of Famers. That's just what I'm deciding.
Thank you, Dirk, for asking.
Thank you, Dirk, for thanking them. And I want to add really quick, I want to thank all of you who are listening for volunteering your time to being a part of the convention and listening and hopefully, you know, becoming inspired and to, you know, jump in and be a part of this great organization and really help with the work that needs to be done and to find other people. I mean, we meet blind people and people with low vision everywhere. On the bus, at the doctor's office, walking down the street.
Beyond the Zoom hosts and streamers, we also had volunteers for our voting the other evening that took our votes. So yeah, we've had a number of volunteers throughout the weekend.
All right, you know, Mr. Chair, that concludes the resolutions report, and I will turn it back over to you.
Gabe, could I say something really quick? This is Andrea.
Sure, go for it, Andrea.
Okay. I just want to say, you know, I didn't realize how much it's easy to show up at a convention, either virtually or in person, and be there and be doing all kinds of things and not realize how much goes on behind the scenes. I didn't until I became a member of the convention committee. There is a tremendous amount of work that all of us do to make this happen. And I just want to acknowledge everybody, our convention committee, all the people that stepped up and helped out and in a myriad of different ways. Lisa, you know, there's just all kinds of people that have helped us. The people at ACB, Cindy Hollis, the membership services coordinator, and her assistant, Natalie, Cecily Nipper, all those people, you know, who you don't maybe hear about or don't see. Have really helped us out a lot. It's like a wedding. You don't know what goes into it until you actually do it.
And just like a wedding, a lot of us just show up and do it. We're told when we're told.
Right, exactly. So
that's what I told Miss. I'm like, oh, just tell me what to do, where to go, what to say.
Gabe, I second that on that one.
And Gabe, you did a really good job of that, too. Just doing what you were supposed to do.
All right. Okay, thank you Jeff and Sarah and the entire resolutions committee. I think I only made it to one resolutions meeting this year, but we'll definitely be having more of those coming up. Anyway, next up, actually, before we do a bylaw, Lisa, are you there? I think we have two more door prizes to spin for you.
Two more.
Let's do one now, and then we'll do one at the very end.
Okay. Just really quickly, though, before I do that, I wanted to go ahead and thank those chapters and affiliates that provide us generous gifts of gift certificates to be able to do our door prizes. IDC, GSGDHI, Contra Costa Chapter, Fresno Chapter, Silicon Valley Chapter, Orange County Chapter, and the San Francisco Chapter. Thank you very, very much. Then I also was just recently made aware today. And I apologize for not knowing this because Nicole has been out of the office sick, so I have not been trying to bother her. We received a generous gift to help with expenses from Silicon Valley Chapter of $200. So I wanted to just give a thank you to Silicon Valley for that assistance and that help. We really appreciate all the chapters and affiliates that we're able to provide for this convention. We know that it's difficult right now. We know that it's a struggle for all of us, but for for you all to be able to provide a little something to help convention and keep the fun going. We all appreciate it very, very much. So with that said, let's do our last $25 gift card before the big finale. And this one is generously provided by the Silicon Valley chapter. Okay, so my screen is shared for anyone who can see the screen. This is not, it's 100% random. So the winner is Lisa Thomas. I promise it is 100% random.
What did you guys say about the Capital Chapter again?
Nothing.
The Capital Chapter?
We didn't say anything about the Capital
Chapter.
On
day two or day one.
You guys won a lot.
Oh, you guys were winning. You guys had your day of winning them. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
We got it.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Madam Treasurer.
Congratulations.
I think it's rigged.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Probably is, but I'm okay with it.
It's not. I guarantee it's not rigged.
Nobody deserves it more.
Can see the screen. It is not rigged.
Did anybody take a screenshot of that?
Oh, my God. That's cool. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Lisa.
Congratulations.
That's funny. All right.